Honestly, that was my dream scenario. Was a double theatrical feature.
I know.
Just bury me. Bury me in Dune.
Bury me in the sand. The sand and the spice. Let's do it.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to Did You Do Your Homework, the pop culture podcast connecting academic ideas to popular media. If you are thinking that we just got an episode from you guys, you're right. This is our part B, post-Oscars ceremony episode. We are recording this the day after the big show, and boy howdy do we have thoughts. But first, I am one of your co-hosts, Martha Sullivan, movie connoisseur and librarian by day. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
Pete Romberg, another movie connoisseur, since we're just dropping that phrase left and right. And a curriculum developer by trade.
Beautiful. So Sunday night were the 96th Academy Awards ceremony. And truly, my first thought is, in 4 years, what are they going to do for the 100th anniversary?
I had that thought in the shower today. I was suddenly realizing, like, oh, in I was listening to a podcast about the Oscars, which is why I was thinking about it in the shower. But I was like, oh, yeah, in 4 years, it's their 100th.
Yeah, it's going to be, I hope it's crazy. I hope it's 6 hours long.
Oh, no.
I hope they do not try to cut any of these stupid corners that they do. I will say, I loved that they started an hour earlier. I thought that was a brilliant choice, and I hope they stick to that.
Yeah, I would imagine that for their 100, they're going to do a pretty low-key, down-tempo kind of show. You know, a bunch of theater kids, they don't want to make a big like deal about things. So, you know, a small private party just for them, not filmed. That makes sense.
Yes, because the Academy is the lead in subtlety. So just initial thoughts on the show. I do enjoy Jimmy Kimmel as the host. I thought his opening monologue started rough. I said a bunch of nice things about how he's typically pretty inoffensive and does a good job moving things along. And then he started with a lot of really embarrassing jokes that made me want to crawl inside the couch and die. But I did think he pulled it back when he recognized... I thought he pulled it back when he brought up a bunch of supporting people, teamsters, engineering folks, basically people who work in Hollywood who were not... in striking unions this summer, but were affected by them and supported them. So I appreciated him giving them that moment.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the shout out to the Teamsters and IATSE and all the rest of the unions that, you know, weren't able to work even though they weren't striking, and who themselves are going up for contract negotiations this year. Hopefully we're going to see a lot of solidarity across the board. I did like the jab he gave at the Directors Guild for folding immediately.
Yes. But yeah, after that, I thought that the ceremony, by and large, was really enjoyable. I thought the presenter banter was top tier this year.
The only one that I thought was not working was... who is it? Viola Davis and Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy.
And as they were doing their banter, I turned to the group I was watching it with and said, this is like exemplary Oscar presentation banter, where it's like, we're trying to seem like we're doing it naturally, but we're very clearly reading off cue cards that someone else wrote. And the jokes are technically jokes. Like, they are structured like jokes, even though it's not really funny. But hey, it's the Oscars, and that's kind of what you expect. And if that's your low bar of, like, standard Oscar-style banter and joke, and almost everyone else rises above that bar, that's a really good show.
I thought that John Mulaney did very well in his audition to be the host of next year's Oscars.
Agreed. I enjoyed his random riff on the Field of Dreams.
Yes.
And again, the group I was with halfway through was like, is he just reciting the plot of the Field of Dreams? Okay, We're enjoying it. I loved Arnold and Danny DeVito coming out and not doing a twins bit, but doing a we're both Batman villains bit.
Batman bit. It was so good. But yeah, my two other favorites that I just want to call out. I really loved America McKinnon doing the bit about Jurassic Park and Kate McKinnon's tasteful nudes. I liked that my very good friend Stevie Spiels was game for that whole bit.
He was game for a couple jokes that I think all landed really well. And then it was very exciting that he, in a very intentional moment, passed the torch from director to director as he presented the Best Directing Award to Nolan. You know, that felt like a very clear, we are anointing the new Spielberg and having Spielberg do it.
Yeah. I don't know that we need to anoint a new Spielberg, but Nolan clearly has a lot of Spielberg in his DNA. And yeah, that was lovely to see. And then the other banter I want to call out was Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. And their movie coming out this year is going to be bad, but I'm also going to have a lot of fun watching it. So yes. I'm not that mad about it.
Yeah, the only downside is it was a very weird combination of SponCon for their movie and necessary shouting out of stuntmen or stunt performers. But also, we're not giving awards to stunt performers, so we just get a two-minute montage at the end of SponCon. The Academy's weird. Business is weird. Sometimes these things all work together.
Yeah, here's the thing about the stunt coordinators. It is obviously ludicrous that we don't have an award for them yet.
Yep.
We are next year gaining an award for casting.
It might be 2026. I actually don't know which year it's coming up in.
Well, but we are confirmed to be getting that one.
Yes.
I think stunts is next. Because stunt and casting are the two that Hollywood has been clamoring for. And the fact that they're starting with one, then I think that the next one will be stunt choreography.
Yeah, your lips to God's ears on this.
Performers.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
What did you think about John Cena's tasteful nudity?
I laughed a lot. I thought it was very cute.
It was incredible. I'm glad that John Cena is like game for anything, it seems.
I think he has a very good sense of humor about himself, and I generally enjoy him.
Yeah. And then the other just like part of the show aspect, and this is getting into the song part of it, like, but it's, you know, that's part of the showmanship of it. This guy Ryan Gosling, I think he's got the juice. I think he's got the riz, as the kids say.
And you think he's got it?
yeah. I could see him a real up and comer.
I thought it was absurd when people are like, is he gonna perform? Like, my guys, he performed a bad song for La La Land. Of course he's going to do the good song.
But like,
it's that
like,
he's like thrilled about being involved with.
The question was like, is he going to play it too cool? Because now we're doing like, you know, it's the award season, whatever. But like, no, he's going to go full Ken and get all his other Kens with him. And
his MO for Barbie has. Yeah, his MO for all of the stuff for Barbie has never been playing it cool.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's, that was never a question in my brain. And yes, his performance was incredible. Everyone was psyched for it. I love seeing them have fun. Everyone was clearly having fun.
The only downside about the whole thing is that everyone in that theater had a blast. And then 15 minutes later, Billie Eilish wins, which we all knew.
Well,
was,
yes, we all knew was coming.
But it's one of those things where it's like, guys, you just had a lot of fun. Maybe you could have rewarded that one, but so it goes.
I mean, they also did get to perform it, so like,
yeah, yeah.
So before we move on to like specific winners, the In Memoriam montage
uh-huh.
is a problem. It's always a problem.
We'll say that the next part of this is us with a lot of production notes for the Oscars, starting with the biggest issue of In Memoriam.
Well, like I said, it's always an issue. And I think that I don't think making it a more complicated performance is the answer. Like, it feels like every year they have different bells and whistles that they try on it. And it's like, guys, a straightforward musician, like a single singer, maybe a singer piano player, screen with the stuff on film, like, keep it simple.
What you don't need is like performative dance happening in the way of the names.
No, absolutely not. I will say, as much as I hated the like post In Memoriam text wall, at least those people got a mention. I feel like normally they just wouldn't, and I would be mad forever that no one was even thinking about Lance Reddick.
My sister tried
to tell me it's because he's mostly a TV person, and I was like, then why is Matthew Perry on there?
Exactly. And you know, in addition to Lance Reddick being relegated to the wall of names that was on screen for like 0.5 seconds, Norman Lear, Ray Stevenson, Sinead O'Connor, Cormac McCarthy, who, you know, is a writer, but whatever.
He's a screenwriter.
Yeah.
They acknowledge.
Treat Williams.
Yeah, Treat Williams.
Yeah. All of these, like, incredible people are relegated to 0.5 seconds of screen time with dancers dancing in the way of their names anyway. And then.
So, like, I also understand. So one of the things that I did appreciate, I appreciated that they at least tried to do more names. I think that's what was happening with the banners, where they could put more faces up at a time. But also, like, I don't know, this wasn't it, guys.
I will also say, and this might be more of a me problem, really, really lovely that they had Andre Bocelli singing. Very, very took me out of it that he was singing Porte Volare, which is the Catalina wine mixer song from Step Brothers. So all I could think of was just like, friggin' Catalina wine mixer. But I don't, that's just a me slash folks who enjoy Step Brothers problem.
I've never seen it.
Go when this is over, YouTube Catalina wine mixer, watch that scene and then be like, oh yeah, okay.
So, awards. I feel
I had one other thing I wanted to say in terms of the production, like the,
yes,
the show in general. I understand that the except for the one year where they tried to have Chadwick Boseman posthumously win Best Actor and then it didn't work out. Traditionally, every year, Best Picture is the last award, and Best Picture goes to the producers. Now, in Oppenheimer's case, the producers are Emma Thomas and Chris Nolan, but also their third producing partner. In the year where the Producers Guild were the clear and intransigent enemies of films and of workers and of labor, it felt a little weird to have the very last speech of the night be given by a person who is solely a producer. There's kind of no way around it. Nolan had already given his speech for directing, so I understand why he, you know, wasn't giving a speech there. I'm not going to give any, you know, shade to Emma Thomas for her speech. But the third person, whose name, again, I don't know. And I will also say that Emma Thomas is a British producer, so she's not part of the American production guild, to the best of my knowledge. But having the last speech of the night be producers after this past year felt off in an unfixable way, like, you know, just as the nature of the situation. So that, not really a critique or a note, just a weird feeling there.
Sure. I was not thinking about that. But yeah, good point.
All right, on to the awards.
Yes, but yeah, I felt like we had some for sures, and a couple of surprises. I will say I personally was surprised that American Fiction won Best Adapted Screenplay. I was very pleased, but I had sort of assumed that that was an Oppenheimer win because in my brain, the screenplay award and the Best Picture award tend to be very linked.
Except for when they try to spread the love.
Like, yeah, and I thought that American Fiction was a really smart screenplay. So I was really happy to see that. It really bums me out that Killers of the Flower Moon didn't win anything.
I know. The most competitive race all season was the actors' race between Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone. So, either one of them would have been, we were both happy with either one of them winning. I felt like there was a somewhat palpable disappointment in my group that Lily Gladstone didn't win, while at the same time, excitement that Emma Stone did win.
Here's my journey with Best Actress. I really thought, like, Lily Gladstone has been kind of on top of that all award season.
But it was, apparently it's been a very, like, insiders have said it's been, like, the most competitive between those two, like, field all season. Stone won the BAFTAs, which is less telling than the SAG, but.
And my feeling on it was that I think both women turned in incredible performances in very different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that Emma Stone was bummed that she won.
I think she was surprised that she won for sure.
There is a very good picture that somebody took behind the scenes after her speech,
mm-hmm.
where she and Lily Gladstone and Annette Bening are all hugging. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone have, I guess, gotten to be really close during the course of this.
Oh, that's fun.
Award season.
Yeah.
And you could Emma Stone was not prepared to win that award.
And her poor dress was like broken.
I know. So I think that I truly, like, as much as it's kind of like, oh, boo hoo, you know, gilded cage and all that. Like, I do think that if you were to ask Emma Stone very candidly, like, who do you think should have won this, you or Lily, I think she would also be team Lily Gladstone.
I mean, and I think that shows, like, her very first reaction to hearing her name was, like, shock that it was her, and then also, like, kind of, like, no, and then, like, oh, shoot, I have to get up and my dress is broken. Like, all of those are playing over her face at once. Yeah.
Yes. I also was reading a very interesting thing on Twitter today about how, I guess some insiders say that Gladstone would have had a better chance if she'd been campaigned for supporting, but
category
that by
fraud.
Putting her, well, I mean, they do that all the time.
I know,
but
I would have shouted about category fraud though.
Well, and by putting herself forward as a lead actress, that is now how people will think of her.
Mm.
So like, no, she didn't win, but now she is in people's minds. Like, the discussion has been her as a lead in this movie.
Yeah.
And that it is very likely that she is not. I mean, I'm always worried when somebody unusual wins an acting award that the Academy is like, we did it. Now we never have to think about this person again.
Right, right.
And I don't think she's going away. So if she ends up with Amy Adams's career, where she is often nominated and never wins, but keeps showing up in critically acclaimed performances, I just want to see her more.
Has Amy Adams still never won anything?
I don't think so.
Jesus Christ, come on, come on! Nominated for six.
In fact, checking.
I'm on it right now. Nominated for six, okay. Never won. Ugh.
It's crazy. The fact that she didn't win for Arrival hurts
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Tune into our next episode for more of our thoughts on Arrival. We'll be getting to that at the end of this episode.
It's true. Very happy. Oh, I loved how they presented the actor awards.
Having
groups of other winners stand up and talk to them very personally. I cried.
I thought that it worked incredibly well. It added an extra, like, you know, 10 minutes per category. But I thought it was time well spent, and the show did not go long. In fact, it went a little short, which was partly because two of the... I think that's because two of the winners were not present. We all could have predicted that Miyazaki would not be there. He wasn't there the last time either, because it's a provincial award for American films, and he makes Japanese movies. but also, Wes Anderson wasn't there for his win for Best Live Action Short.
I'm not surprised.
Honestly, I think that was a boss move. The Academy refuses to accept anything he does other than Budapest, so he's like, yeah, I don't, whatever. I'm not making movies for you. So I don't know if it was because of that or because of other things. It felt like towards the latter half, they were like cutting things down more than, you know, like the speeches for the best supporting actress all felt very personal and all felt very long. Whereas by the time we got to best actor, they felt slightly less personal and also much shorter. So I wonder if there was some real time editing to those speeches. And I also wonder how much of it were... you know, speeches written by the presenters versus speeches sort of like given to them to say. It was probably a mixture of the two.
I also got the feeling that more of the supporting actress presenters knew the people that they were talking to.
It felt like every single supporting actress was like, you're a friend of mine and I am like telling you this from my heart, you know.
And then, which is also why I really loved Forrest Whitaker speaking to Coleman Domingo when he was like, Coleman, my buddy.
Yes.
I also...
Mahershala Ruffalo. That was like, oh, these guys are buds? Cool.
Tim Robbins is the tallest man ever. I also liked how he was like, I haven't been seen in public in years. I'm going to come on, tell you all how Robert De Niro should win, and then vanish into the night.
He was actually a great example to me of how actors can be bad public speakers, right? Like, because it's not the same thing. It's similar, but it's not exactly the same. And that was kind of fun to see. And on the flip side, Nick Cage showing Nicholas up and Cage. just being like, I'm here.
Nope. I screamed.
Yes.
Incredible.
Like, he's like, I'm here for the next 2 minutes. I am the coolest guy in the world. And then I'm done.
I also bet he and Paul Giamatti are legitimately friends.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I loved that Paul cried for Divine Joy Randolph. That was so lovely.
Yes.
I was bummed that we didn't get a camera cut to Dominic Sessa, who I know was there. But not sitting with his fellow with the people who are actually nominated, which I am still salty about.
Was he the kid in
yes,
that movie?
Yeah, he's the kid in the he's the kid in the Holdovers. But yeah, I just thought that was lovely, and what I really liked about it is that it gives more weight to the fact that even though there can only be one winner, every one of these performances was an achievement in some way.
Yes. The one thing that we did not get in place of this is clips of the actual performances. Those are often pretty badly chosen clips, or like they're the most like, you know, out, you know, the most kind of stuff. So it can go.
Yeah, I didn't miss that.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer, big winner, honestly took home fewer than I would have thought. It took home 7, and I was thinking to take home 8. I think that the big
Poor Things?
I was about to say, the big news for me is that Poor Things kind of swept a lot of the below the fold, you know, categories that I thought were a little more up in the air. I was excited for a lot of the wins, but there was a bit of a feeling for me of, like, spread the love a little bit. But also, like, independently, these are all very good wins for Poor Things. Production design, I would love to have seen that go to Barbie, but the Poor Things production was incredible, so I can't feel bad about it.
I was bummed about that because I love a practical set, and I think a lot of the production, I think a lot of the design in Poor Things was CGI, which it looked great. But I love how much of the Barbie sets they actually built.
Yeah, yeah. Ditto with costume. Again, poor things in Barbie. Like, Napoleon is your classic, like, you know, period, like, costume period drama. Poor things in Barbie were the fun costumes. Went to Poor Things. Would not have been mad about a Barbie win. That was a little tougher. The costumes in Poor Things were just incredible. But
yeah.
But after production, or after, yeah, production, makeup and hairstyle, and costume, I'm like, that's really great for Poor Things. I want there to be a little more love spread around here.
Well, and we can all just be sad that Barbie only went home with one win.
Yeah, in Best Original Song, not even the correct original song. Beyond I'm Just Ken, there was the Dua Lipa song.
Listen, I'm Just Ken is a great song, and it was a super fun performance. It was never gonna win.
I know, but I'm you know, the Academy loves Billie Eilish. The Dua Lipa song, which they began and ended the ceremony with, was kind of a better song. Like, I don't want to say better song, but a more fun song than the Billie Eilish one, while also being more serious than the Ken one. So that's.
Do you think Diane Warren is planning on having Billie Eilish killed?
I think Diane Warren is happy with her legal contract to be nominated anytime she does any song, no matter what it's for or how good it is. And knowing that she made a Faustian bargain, that she will rack up infinite nominations and zero wins. The monkey's paw is 'tis terribly cursed.
Very happy for Killian. Very happy for Killian.
Was it was Kimmel making jokes about Killian versus Cillian?
Yeah, he said when Killian is in a serious drama, his name is Killian, and when he's in a comedy, it's Cillian.
Yes, all right, that's a good joke.
I thought most of the jokes were good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, happy for Killian, happy for Robert Downey Jr., who understood the assignment and performed it admirably. Like, get up there, be Robert Downey Jr. Great.
I love how much he loves his wife.
Funny that he made the crack about, like, I credit my terrible childhood or something. He, in the past couple years, he made a pretty, like, nice documentary about his dad. So, I don't, you know, obviously he's being very self-deprecating. It's possible to have a artistically, you know, interesting and brilliant father and also not have a good childhood. Like, those two things can live together. But, you know, it was kind of an interesting note for him to make.
Mm-hmm.
Boy and the Heron took animated feature. Very exciting.
Oh, we haven't talked about my best girl Godzilla yet.
I was waiting for you to bring that one up.
So first of all, I knew that they were winners in my heart because the design team from Godzilla showed up on the red carpet with mini Godzilla statues in tiny bow ties.
Did you see their shoes?
I was just about to talk about their shoes.
I saw,
they
obviously...
They were wearing very classically heeled boots that all had a Godzilla claw on the heel.
I did not watch the red carpet part, so I did not see that until, like, as they were all you know, going up on stage to accept the win, I was like, they have little Godzilla toys! Everyone in my room loved it. And then it's like, oh no, they're all holding things, and now they're holding two things, and now there's a speech. How do we navigate that? Very sweet moment. But I thought I was
saying, I think that the guy... Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, I thought I saw that, like, you know, one of the dudes was in heels of some sort, but I couldn't see that they were Godzilla heels, so I was just like, oh, cool, interesting fashion choices. And it wasn't until this morning that I saw a close-up of their feet, and I was like, oh, these are the coolest people in the room.
Yes.
Other than the dog. Messi, obviously, the coolest one in the room.
Best boy.
I was very pleased that Ozzy was looking away from the TV every single time they cut to Messi. So he did great.
So Takashi Yamazaki, who was the effects supervisor gave the acceptance speech, and I think he should have just given it in Japanese. Like, I sympathized with him for trying to read it in English, but I feel like he would have been justified in just giving it in Japanese.
Yeah, yeah. That was a rude.
But I was so happy for them.
That was a rare rude moment where the orchestra started to play them off, and luckily I think they stopped. But it's like, come on, man. He's like struggling with the language. Give him time.
I think every person who wins an Oscar should be allowed to talk for as long as they want to in their acceptance speech.
In general, I thought there wasn't too much playing them off in this ceremony, which I was pretty happy with.
But yeah, I just feel like I'm willing to accept that we will get long speeches from people who we hear talk all the time if it also means that the people who will never get another chance to stand up there get to say their whole piece.
Yes, yes.
And if your show is running long, cut the bits.
Yeah, yeah. And this had the opposite problem. Like, at the end of the show, Jimmy Kimmel's like, I got time to do some more bits because we're not running long. A good example, though, of the orchestra letting a dude cook was the 20 Days of Mariupol speech, which was
yes.
A very good and affecting speech, and they let him talk as long as he needed to, which was the correct choice.
Also, Jonathan Glazer, when he accepted Best mm-hmm. International Film for Zone of Interest.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
And also, while Zone of Interest was not my favorite, I don't think there's ever been a more deserving sound win.
Yes, Oppenheimer would have been the only other one in meaningful contention, and Maestro was also like, you know, like that's a sound movie, whatever. But like, it's like Oppenheimer and Maestro, not having seen Maestro, just, you know, understanding what it is, are movies that are like the sound is really powerful. Zone of Interest is a movie that is whatever. I said this 800 times on the last episode. Zone of Interest is a movie about the sound.
Yes.
My man Hoyte got the cinematography award. He's enormous, apparently. I saw someone on Reddit post the Futurama gif of like, why did Hoyte, the largest of the nominees, not simply eat the other four nominees?
Well, and then who was the guy who won, who got up and is like, who looked like he was 22 years old?
Ludwig von Göransson? For score?
Yes.
For Oppenheimer?
Yeah, I think so. He had the shoulder. He had great hair. Curly hair.
He's a snack.
But yeah, he got up and Lizzie and I were both like, what are we doing with our lives?
Bad news, he's 39.
He's 39, yes. Yeah. We looked it up.
Oh, he was signed to Rock Nation at one point. Interesting. That's Jay-Z's record company.
The only other thing I want to say about the original song performances, I was really glad that they did not, that the performance for the song from Killers of the Flower Moon Yes, the performance of that felt very respectful. Like, they did not try to turn it into a huge spectacle. I was talking to a coworker today, and she commented that it felt like we in the audience got a chance to observe something rather than feeling like it was being performed for us.
Yes.
And since the Academy so very rarely practices restraint, that was really nice to see.
When it was announced, and then, you know, you and others were like, yeah, that means they're going to perform it. I was like, oh, how is that going to come out? I heard from someone I was watching it with that in order to be nominated, they had to actually write it down as a score, like using musical notation, which was something that had like never been done before and was incredibly difficult to do, because it's not a song designed with Western musical notation or ideas of music in mind. So it was incredibly challenging to just write it as sheet music.
I would love to hear from whoever worked on that with the performers.
Same. My source is one of the people I was watching the Oscars with, and I haven't been able to do any deeper research into this. So, asterisking that whole statement, but...
Sure.
but I agree. If that is, in fact, like, part of the process, then I would love to know more about that.
I'm running out of things. I'm running out of opinions. Thought it was a good show.
I'm just quickly scrolling through. A lot of it was expected. The few unexpected stuff was, as we had already talked about, best actress, and then some of the below the fold kind of things. Messi the dog was great. I don't know if you saw the picture of the person doing the fake dog clapping under the seat. working those fake hands. Very good. Cool that Sean Lennon was there, I guess.
No.
Wishing Yoko a happy British Mother's Day. And yeah, all right.
Fine.
I think that's all. Jennifer Lame getting the win for editing for Oppenheimer. I always thought it was between her and Schumacher. Schumacher already has a ton. This is Lame's first. I think she's going to go on to do great things because Oppenheimer was a feat of editing, among other things. And I loved her dress.
If somebody listening to this podcast complains about the length of these movies the way that Jimmy Kimmel was complaining about the length of these movies, I will drive to your house and I will punch you in the face. Editing does not mean how long is this movie.
Yes. To quote not me, this was the year of the 3 to 3.5 hour movies that moved, that like felt like they were 2 hours.
I have watched Killers of the Flower Moon twice now. I would watch it again tomorrow.
I love that you have that much time, and I say that after having watched the middle hour of Oppenheimer like 3 nights ago.
Length is only a problem if you are not engaged by the material.
Agreed. Other than carving out the time to see it, that's my big issue. Yeah.
Any closing thoughts? Good year for movies. Good year for movies.
Great year for movies. Good year for the Academy Awards. It'll be interesting to see what next year's look like.
I think Dune, my early prediction is that Dune 2 is going to run the table.
I think so next year's Oscars. Partly because, as we were saying, the sort of like, the Return of the King effect, Dune 3 is not officially greenlit. So now we give all the plaudits to Dune 2 for Dune 1. And also because no other movies are coming out, at least made by Hollywood. I think it's going to be a lot of international films. And then a lot of like
and a lot of A24. Smaller films.
Yeah.
God, I hope they nominate Love Lies Bleeding for something so that Kristen Stewart can go to the Oscars.
That would be great.
That's my hope.
That is on my list of movies to be watching. I enjoyed that in both the Nolan's director speech and Emma Thomas's production speech, they specifically shouted out Universal, which felt like a dig at Warner Brothers, because, you know, Nolan had been a Warner Brothers boy since at least Batman Begins, if not Insomnia. And, you know, because of the whole Tenet issue, he cut bait and jumped over to Universal for this is like stupid inside baseball that nobody cares about. But it almost
I was
felt
say,
like
this is not blank check. Peter.
No, it almost felt like shouting out Universal was a specific dig to Warner Brothers, and I was here for that pettiness.
I'm always kind of here for pettiness. Be mean.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Yep, so my very last closing thought that I want to go out on is even with the misses and the Lily Gladstone of it all, I remain impressed that this was the slate of movies that got nominated. I think it is incredible that we had such a range of movie-going experiences that we could talk about things like Anatomy of a Fall and like Past Lives in the same conversation as things like Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer. I think that the fact that we had two international films and one additional film that is mostly in Korean in our Best Picture nominees speaks to the fact that we are finally starting to see the effects of a more diverse Academy voting body. I'm thinking of it like a cruise ship where it's going to take it a long time to turn, but it's starting. And I think we're finally starting to see the effects of that.
Well, and two foreign films plus Past Lives, mostly in Korean, plus Poor Things, which like Yorgos Lanthimos is a Greek director. So, you know, that's sort of a mixed production there.
And we've seen bits and pieces of this before, like Alejandro Iñárritu is kind of an Oscar darling. Guillermo del Toro has some nominations and the win for The Shape of Water. But this was the first year that it felt like there was more than just like the one international director that we decided to recognize this year.
Yeah, like not only was Poor Things up for Best Picture, it was the second most winning movie at the Oscars. And like Poor Things is not what I would call an Oscar bait movie.
No. Even though The Favorite was,
but The Favorite,
it's a much weirder movie than The Favorite.
And it's a much like sexier and audacious movie than The Favorite. Like The Favorite has the trappings of being a period piece, which, you know, Oscar can get behind and loves. Whereas Poor Things isn't. It's a Technicolor, you know, fever dream, delightfully so, but that's not usually what wins.
We will be back in 2 weeks, approximately, to dig deep on Denis Villeneuve.
I think we're back in a month, right? Because traditionally we'd have a Love Ya in 2 weeks, and then we're supposed to be back on the 5th. we're going to be back on the 5th.
Okay. We'll be back.
On April
Stay 5th. Stay tuned. Perfect. Love it. I guess Marin and I should pick a Love Ya movie.
or do what you need to do with Love Ya. But DYDYH will be back on April 5th.
Fantastic. And we are going to be doing a deep dive on the works of Denis Villeneuve, who just put out Dune Chapter 2. We will be talking
Boogaloo,
about
Electric Spice Orgy Boogaloo.
But we will be talking about Sicario, Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, and Dunes twice. Very much looking forward to that. In the meantime, you can follow the show on social media at DYDYH Podcast. You can also follow the other show that I do, Love Ya, which looks at a adult rom-com or piece of teen cinema in detail and shares our social media feeds. You can follow me personally at most places, but mostly Blue Sky and Instagram these days, at Magical Martha. Pete, where can people find you?
You can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd. Both of those, I think, are P. Romberg. That's P-R-H-O-M-B-E-R-G. That's definitely my Blue Sky handle, and it is also my Letterboxd handle. Great. Good job, me.
Yeah, find me on Letterboxd. It's the best social media right now. And I finally have a 2024 movie to start my ranked list of 2024 movies. So yeah, we will see you all in a couple of weeks. And until then, enjoy doing your homework. Class dismissed.
All right, cool.
Yeah, thank you for fitting this in. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, this is great. Love talking Oscars on both sides of the ceremony.
Yeah, I had to get all of my brain worms out, and now I really can move on to new movies.